Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Half Year 2016 Financial Results Conference Call. Following the brief overview by the FBN Holdings management team, an interactive question and answer session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. U.K. Eke, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am U.K. Eke, the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings plc, and I would like to welcome you on behalf of my co-host today, Dr. Shola Adedutu, the Managing Director, FBNL, to this call. We shall be presenting our unaudited 6 months results for the period ended June 30, 2016. I'd like to confirm that we released the results today to the stock exchange, and we've also posted it to our website. I will make an assumption that you've had time to look at it. What I will do will be to do a quick summary in a minute or two, and then we'll go straight to questions. Essentially, we had a very challenging operating period, and Fitch downgraded the long-term foreign and local currency issuer default rating for the sovereign. On the back of that, we also had a downgrade of FBN Edge plc. The other point to note, by way of macro, is that the economy continues to contract quarter on quarter, and indeed IMF has stated that the second half will also be very challenging. We do not expect to see a very remarkable improvement in market conditions and the economy generally. During the period under review, we also saw Central Bank step into the era of liberalization of FX market, which led to around about 40% currency devaluation. That had significant impact, obviously, on our operations. But despite this slow business environment, I'm glad to report that we posted just about 1.2% drop year-on-year in our gross earnings, and also took an impairment charge for about 69.9 billion, mostly arising from the impact of devaluation on the oil and gas, real estate, and general commerce sectors of our loan book. The NPL ratio also inched up a bit from 21.5% Q1 to about 22.8%. And I would confirm that the four key things that occupied our attention were around diversifying the revenue base, which we committed to, and we saw a good improvement in the contribution of the non-bank subsidiaries in this regard. The second thing that occupied us, our attention, was improving the asset quality. Again, we committed to this, and I'm glad to report that we are seeing remarkable improvements in our risk management practices. We have reset our risk appetite and also tightened our risk acceptance criteria. We will continue to pursue the recovery and remediation which we committed to, and we'll give you the details as we progress on this call. The third issue that preoccupied us was with respect to cost efficiency, and we are glad to report yet another great show in terms of cost-to-income ratio, which has dropped to 47.4% from 61.6% prior year number. Indeed, riding on that, we have continued to show improvement in our cost of funds. The last item that we committed to reviewing and working on is with respect to capital efficiency. And I'm glad to report that all the operating entities that are regulated capital-wise have exceeded, continue to exceed the capital adequacy ratio as prescribed by Central Bank. For the First Bank Nigeria standalone, we closed at about 15.4%, which is above the regulatory requirement. And for the Merchant Bank, we closed at about 27.9%. Recall that the required ratio for the merchant bank is just 10%. We are happy with the results we have seen so far. I think they validate the efficacy of our various initiatives, and we do think that as we get into the last half of the year, we will continue to post results that are respectable. That said, I would like Juliet to open the lines for questions, and we'll be glad to take questions from participants. Juliet.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And if you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. So it's star 1 for questions. We'll now take our first question from Konstantin Rozdantsev from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We've seen that in the second quarter of the year, the bank reported quite a significant increase in loan impairment charges in the income statement. Would you expect to repeat the same amount of loan impairment charges going forward in Q3 and Q4 this year?
Your question is around the charges, the payment charge for the first half of the year, specifically for the second quarter. You're asking whether we expect to see such elevated charges again for the subsequent periods, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll suggest we take a few more questions so we can take them in batches. Juliet. Another question, please. Next question.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Sharat Dua from Charlemagne Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, two questions really. Just one expanding on the previous question. If you can, rather than just telling us the direction, but give us more detail behind the asset quality numbers and the provisions you've taken, and what the water, oil, and gas exposures you've taken as NPLs, what you've restructured, what the terms of some of those restructurings would be, just so we can understand how conservative, I suppose, you've been as far as classification of loans and impairing those has been. Obviously, the coverage ratio is still pretty low. So that would be the first one, much more detail on the asset quality. And the second one would be I'd love some more detail around the FX gain that obviously was also significant. Clearly, it's devaluation related, but if you can be a bit more specific as to whether this is just simply repricing of long assets, if there's some derivative positions in there that have paid off, and how you're positioned going forward. Obviously, we've seen the currency continue to weaken since the 30th of June. How are you positioned for further currency weakness in the aftermath of that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for those questions. Let me first of all start by giving you the feedback around the asset quality. As you know, when we had the Q1 call, we did mention that our key focus in the 2016 will be on remediation and recovery. That is in progress. And even though we haven't, in terms of putting the hard number, in terms of recoveries on the table, it's not yet very substantial. But we've seen very good progress, especially as far as the top two NPL names are concerned. For the main name that is in the public domain, which is Atlantic Energy, the process is continuing. It's still a bit because of the nature of the asset itself and the number of stakeholders that need to get on board for us to move forward. But we're happy to report to you that that process is gaining more traction now, and from all indications, we expect that that before the end of this current financial year, this should be fully resolved. As far as the other large ticket transactions, challenge accounts are concerned, varying degree of progress have been made, but cumulatively, we see progress, and we expect that the impact of the progress that we made will begin to feed through our financials as we go towards the end of the year. Regarding your question around impairment, whether we expect the impairment numbers to continue in the second half of the year, a lot will depend on the kind of actual results that we achieve with the big challenge account. We are reasonably optimistic that at least one, if not two of those challenge accounts will be recovered during the course of Q3, Q4. If that happens, then that would be a major boost in terms of reducing the NPL level and also impacting on the impairment charges. On the FX gain that happened in Q2, we had mentioned earlier on that we do have a long dollar position and devaluation would be positive for us in one breath as far as the structure of the balance sheet is concerned. So that is the impact of the of that statement. However, the other side of the devaluation is that even the structure of our loan book today, where prior to devaluation about 45% of our loan book is denominated in foreign currency, the impact of 40-50% devaluation is that our loan book has grown on the back of devaluation and our risk-weighted asset has equally grown and with direct impact on our capital adequacy ratio, which explains why our capital adequacy ratio dropped from 17 to 15.4. 15.4 being the capital adequacy ratio without considering the earnings up until half of the year. If you consider that post audit, then our capital adequacy ratio should inch up back to about 16.7%. We continue to sensitize. Regarding your question on the impact of further devaluation, we continue to sensitize our balance sheet to impact of further devaluation. We've looked at additional 15% devaluation from 280, which was where it settled originally. We think we'll be fine. Again, if you remember, I mentioned the fact that we do have a long dollar position, which has not yet been defeated yet. So, yes, it will impact on the risk-weighted assets and the capital adequacy ratio, but it will also have a positive impact in terms of exchange gain. So, in a way, it basically would
This is UK Eke. What is clear is that we will continue to face difficult operating conditions as we run through the financial year. And so the challenge... Thank you. Let me apologize for the lost connection. And I would like to proceed with the questions. If you still have questions, we'll be glad to take those questions, please. Juliet.
Thank you, sir. We'll now take our next question from Ndubuisi Obike from Stanbic IBTC Pensions. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Mr. Obike, your line is open. Make sure your line is not on mute.
Hi, good afternoon. Sorry, I just missed. I would like your view on the impact of the recent increase in today's increase in MPR to 14%, given that about 30% of your deposits are from savings accounts, and we know that savings accounts interest rate is tied to MPR. How do you expect that will affect your net interest income for the rest of the year? That's number one question. And I also like your guidance for your revised guidance for numbers like loan growth, deposits, ROE for full year 2016.
Can we take another question, please, Juliet?
Okay, will now take our next question from Steve Motzi from BPI Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the call. Just two questions from my side. I just want to get a sense for the size of the USD portion of your equity, if any. And also, just looking at your interest income, that declined. We were kind of expecting some kind of a jump on your interest income on the back of the revaluation of the interest income that you earn in dollars. So that being a bit of a surprise to see it coming down, could you maybe talk us through that just to get a sense for what's really happening to your reducing interest income? Thank you. Thank you.
Can I request you repeat the second question, please? It wasn't very clear. It wasn't very audible.
Okay. The second question, I'll just repeat that. It's we noticed that your interest income declined, and we were looking at it and thinking that it might actually go up since you would have probably revalued some of the interest income that you received in dollars. So the translation effect would have probably been positive. So seeing it coming down, it's raised a lot of questions for us as to why it came down.
Okay, that's clear now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Iniabong, the Group Treasurer. Related to your question on the increase in the NPL and the impact on net interest margins, I think generally speaking, when you look at a bank like ours, their higher rate environment tends to be NIM supportive for us. So yes, there will be an impact on the cost associated with savings accounts as we adjust to align with the NPL, but it will be more than compensated for by the increase that we expect to see in the treasury book. Indeed, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen the central bank's monetary policy stance, and more importantly, its monetary policy actions align more with what it's aiming to do on the foreign exchange side. So we expect a much higher rate environment, and the opportunity that an NPR hike gives is that you then translate that to across your loan book as well. So we think it still remains premium supportive for us in this environment.
Okay, with respect to the guidance on loan growth, I would draw your attention to page slide 25, and we have provided guidance on all the key areas. So specifically on the loan growth, we are guiding to 25%, and this is largely driven by the deval, essentially. And then with respect to the deposits, 10 to 12%. NIM, we believe we can sustain 7.5 to 8% NIM, even in current environment. Indeed, the group treasurer has just confirmed that in a rising interest rate regime, we are NIM positive. It's NIM positive for us, clearly. So we're able to reprice our assets very quickly. Cost of funds, 3 to 4%. Cost to income ratio, we have recorded massive improvements in that area. We think we can sustain that. We're guiding to not higher than 50% cost-to-income ratio. Keep in mind we're coming from a high of about 61% for first quarter. NPL ratio, I have spoken to that, 25% or less. And ROA, 1.6 to 1.8%. And ROE, 11 to 13%. Those are the numbers we have guided to on slide 25.
Regarding your question on the USD component of our capital structure, it's only our Tier 2 capital that are actually denominated in foreign currency, and is positive from the fact that our capital adequacy calculation is based on the Naira balance, given the fact that our functional currency as a Nigerian entity is Nigerian Naira. So that is positive. The equity of our FBN UK, especially, is also denominated in pounds. So in a way, that also helps with overall hedging of the balance sheet. Regarding your question on why the interest income dropped, in the first half of the year, the interest rate environment was generally low, and that was one of the reasons why maintaining our NIM was quite important for us. So interest income on most of our security actually dropped. It's only at the beginning of the second half of the year, now that the central bank monetary policy stance is more NIM supportive, that we expect this to trend upward. That is one reason why our interest income dropped. The other key reason why we had a drop in interest income in the first half of the year, due to the paucity of quality assets, so there was also a fight to essentially to keep quality assets on each bank's books, and pricing almost became a competitive tool. So some downward pressure on pricing there. Our expectation in the second half of the year is, given the recent changes that central bank has made as far as NPR is concerned, we expect that this, we believe, will be NIM supporting, and we expect that our interest rate, our interest income will trend upward, both from our loan portfolio and also equally from our government securities portfolio.
Next question, please, Juliet.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Adeyanke Akinsola from Chapel Hill, Denham. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, everyone. Please, I'd like you to be specific on the proportion of revaluation gains out of your foreign exchange gains in each one. So I would want you to give specific numbers to that. And I'd also like to know how much trading income related to FX has impacted your performance so far since the market reopened. So was it something significant as at the second quarter? And what's your expectation now going into the third and the fourth quarter? Then on the NPR hike, I'd like to hear your views on the impact of that on lending. So do you see this as something negative for your loan growth? I think that'll be all for now.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Yes, our next question comes from Nick Dimitrov from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I have a quick couple of questions. So the first one, can you provide us with some color on your renegotiated loan book, and what percentage of this renegotiated book is actually non-performing? So that's going to be my first question, and then I have a follow-up.
You don't want to say the next question or the follow-up question straight up, so we can take them together?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Okay. So the other question is, I was looking at your guidance, and I was wondering, what kind of FX did you use to come up with this guidance? And then the last question is going to be on capital. So I was looking at your total capital. It's 15.4%, and it's barely above the regulatory minimum of 15%. So what is your action plan if the Naira continues to devalue and put pressure on capital? I understand that some of it is dollar-denominated. You did mention that the Tier 2 paper is dollar-denominated. Obviously, you haven't hedged it back into Naira, but nonetheless, there's going to be impact on capital. What happens if your total capital ratio dips below 15%? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, speaking to the prior question on proportion of trading income post the liberalization of the FX market, in real terms, it's been nominal, simply because markets truly haven't really normalized and liquidity levels are nowhere near what they used to be 12 to 18 months ago. So it's been limited. We have seen some improvements in market liquidity. We've seen some additional flexibility over the last, I would say, fortnight or thereabouts. So one would expect that the outlook as it relates to FX trading performance and associated FX businesses in the trade finance book and so on should be positive going forward. But it really is underpinned by the level of market activity that comes back, which has started to improve. So at this point, I'd say it's largely nominal.
Let me start by taking the question on capital. Yes, we made the, based on the audited capital of the bank today, our capital adequacy ratio stands at 15.4. But we've also highlighted the fact that if you consider the unaudited earnings up until the end of June 2016, our capital adequacy ratio will be at about 16.7. Again, we expect to accrue more earnings between now and end of the year, and that will definitely be supportive of our capital position. We do have an understanding that capital retention is top priority over and above upstreaming of earnings into the holding company. That's point number one. Point number two, which is very, very important, is that since the commencement of the, since the current leadership assumed office, we've had a lot of strategic refocusing of the business. First and foremost, we are moving the institution away from being a credit-led institution to a transaction or transactions-led institution. We have restructured the business model of our corporate banking BU has changed from a situation whereby we tend to hold a significant portion of transactions that we have structured to a situation whereby we structure and we distribute a substantial part of what we have structured. So by implication, we have minimal hold position and the capital consumption is much, much lower. Equally very important is the fact that we have disposed of non-core assets. So for example, we have a company called InSourcing that provides a certain type of services that we have just sold. And currently we're in the market going through the process to divest from a fully owned subsidiary of the bank, which is SBM Mortgage. All these are part of the capital enhancement and capital preservation methodology that we've basically embarked upon. So a combination of earnings retention, divestment from non-core assets, but equally more important is refocusing the business away from a credit-led institution, more to transaction-led institution. And we believe a combination of all these measures should ensure that we land safely at the end of the day. On the question on the renegotiated loan book, as at half year, that's at about 3.3% of the loan book. A number of them are already in the NPL portfolio, but I don't have the actual number handy, so we provide that subsequent to the call. The impact of NPR on lending, again, we think, depending on how you look at this, this is already anticipated given where the inflation is, so it shouldn't materially impact lending, and then it's also positive from the government borrowing perspective, so in terms of a treasury business, we think the impact is equally quite positive. For the purpose of our guidance, we've also factored in some further depreciation in the value of the currency. We've looked at devaluation ranging between 10 to 15%, and that formed the basis of the guidance number that has been used going forward.
I think we've taken the last set of questions. Can we go to the next batch of questions, please?
Sure. We'll now take our next question from Victor Chiazor from Capital Bancorp. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hi, Victor.
Hello. Hello. Okay, hello. Good afternoon. Good
afternoon. Afternoon, we can hear you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. My question regarding the last question, last answer you just gave and another one. You said with regard to your capital adequacy, The strategy is about earnings retention and divestment from core businesses, businesses that are not generating as much as you expect. For me, in terms of earnings retention, so that suggests to me that come full year 2016, First Bank Nigeria Holding would most likely be retaining most of its earnings to actually shore up capital and meet them required capital adequacy ratios set by the CBN, and which might actually imply that the company might not be paying out dividend to shareholders. That's the question. And my second question is regarding the MPL. Your current MPL coverage is at 41.5 as against 127.0% for half year 2015. I'd like to know what prompted your decision to peg your MPL coverage at 41.5 as against 127. And why should shareholders be comfortable or okay with the current MPL coverage ratio? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm going to take the first question on the capital, and then Shola will take the second question, the bank. Just to clarify, we have a policy to ensure that at the minimum, we have about 150 bps capital buffer for each of the operating entities. That is statutory. That is our policy. Today, we have 15.4 audited. And like my colleague Shola said, if we capitalize 6 months' earnings, we're going to be at about 16.7. If we analyze that, will probably be around about 18%. So there is no doubt in our mind where we're headed in terms of capital. He did make the point that we will retain the earnings in the books of the bank, and that is for the purpose of ensuring that we maintain the buffer that I just spoke about. And also, you asked the question around whether we will not be able to pay dividend should the bank retain 100% earnings. Let me remind us that FBN Holdings is a listed entity, and therefore that is the entity that will pay dividend to the ultimate shareholders. And as an investment vehicle, we have the merchant bank, we have insurance that also upstream dividend to the holding company. Indeed, last year, First Bank of Nigeria Limited did not pay dividend to the parent, FBN Holdings, and we're able to still pay dividend of 15 kobo per share to the ultimate shareholders. I would draw your attention to slide 10, where you see performance of the Merchant Bank, Banking and Asset Management Group, where yesterday we have seen about 9.9 billion in profit before tax. So appropriating for reserves and other needs of that entity, which in itself has about 27-28% capital adequacy, we can project that they would be able to remit dividends to the holding company. The same thing goes for the insurance, where we have also continued to record profits year on year, and therefore again 2016 we'll expect them to upstream dividend to the parent holding company, which would then mean that yes, we should be able to pay dividend if we have that desire to do so. We will consider the capital needs of all the operating entities, and then the surplus will be returned to the ultimate shareholders, because at the holding company level, we don't expect to carry capital. So that is not an issue for us. We will continue to drive our businesses to ensure that all the operating entities, including the bank, return profits, and then we will retain those operating entities enough that is needed for future growth and to maintain regulatory capital requirements. I don't know if that is clear.
Fine. Clear.
Okay, thank you.
Our NPL coverage ratio at 42% is a function of several factors. I mean, it emanated from several factors. One is the quality of the underlying asset. I want to remind us that we report under the International Financial Reporting Standards, where the quality of the asset, the quality of the underlying collateral you are holding, enables you to serve as an offset, for want of a better word, as when you are computing the impairment charges for your challenge account. So the fact that it's standing at 42 is a reflection of the quality of the asset, of quality of the underlying collateral that we hold. Equally very important, it also reflects the level of remediation that we have embarked upon. And so a combination of those two confirms, I mean, suggests that where the coverage ratio stands now is okay, but is a process, is a continuing process of assessment and reassessment, and then if there's any need for us to increase the coverage ratio, we'll definitely do that.
Okay, next question, please, Juliet.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll now take our next question from Ola Ogunsanya from RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking this call. Most of my questions have been answered, but I just have a few questions left. So on the back of the NPL decision today, what proportion of the loan book will be repriced, and by how much? And also, if you could please give an update on ITO. So is the central bank requiring you to make any additional provisions on the name? And I know you talked a bit about the devaluation impacting the quarter-on-quarter growth in impairments. But please, can you just give a bit more color? So is this largely because you're holding naira provisions on your FX loans? Or is it because you noticed some weakness in, you know, on the back of this, at your customers' ability to repay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take another question, please.
Yes, we'll now take our next question from Adewale Okunrinboye from RRM Investment. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
All right. Thank you for the presentation. My first question just goes to your on the Naira. So where do you see the Naira at the end of the year? And what does that mean for your CA, for your capital adequacy ratios? My second question is also goes to what's your guidance for coverage ratios for full year as well? And what portion of your NPLs are FX? So what portion of your NPLs are FCY facilities that have run bad? I think that'll be all for now.
Okay, as it relates to loan repricing, I wouldn't say it's a linear relationship. Clearly, we do recognize that the environment is challenged, so it doesn't mean because the MPR has been raised that translates to a 200 basis point increase in lending rates to the Naira book, right? The Naira book today is roughly 50% of our portfolio, our Naira lending book. So, in theory, that is potentially available to be repriced. Though we do believe that the bigger impact will be seen more through the Treasury book or government securities portfolio. But we will look to reprice some of the loans, but will not be linear. I think there was a question also on our view of whether Naira will be settled at the end of the year. I still think there's still a number of moving parts here. Clearly, with the central bank taking the more recent moves it has, we've seen in the interbank that the currency has crested 300. We're looking at about 308, 310-ish, somewhere like that at the current time. There may probably be some further slippage, but we don't expect to see the order of magnitude of the level of devaluation we've seen thus far. So I think it's a bit it's early days. We also have to factor in the impact of the monetary policy stance, the measures they've taken today, which will probably moderate further downside. So I think it's a bit too early. I won't have to digest how the the MPC decisions will feed through the market. So what is clear to us here is this most likely has capped or tempered any further downside from this point. Because bear in mind, we've effectively moved, give or take, almost 50, slightly over 50% already. So yes, there may still be a bit more, but not certainly not another 50% or more than that.
Regarding ITO, as you are probably aware, the central bank did a pressure examination of all exposure to ITO. We are in discussion all the key members of the consortium in discussion with the central bank, because we do not believe that at this current point in time that particular exposure is challenged, and is essentially based on the fundamentals of the business and where the business is today. We started off with ITO. It took over the oil feed when it was producing less than 20,000 barrels a day. Currently, it produces close to 80,000 barrels a day, which you think is significant. Even when oil price went as low as 27, a key part of the obligations were also being serviced. Now that oil seems to have stabilized north of $45 to a barrel, we think the credit is actually in a stronger position today than it was 6 months ago. So there's ongoing conversation with central banks to say this is an obligor that requires support, and that at this particular point in time, we should rally around this particular obligor. So we believe that the credit is performing based on the fundamentals that is known to us, and the conversation with central banks is ongoing. On the percentage of NPL that is foreign currency denominated, I think about slightly above 50% of our NPL are denominated in foreign currency, approximately about 55% of that. In terms of the likely impact of further devaluation on asset quality, again, you have to look at the base effect first. The fact that today we already have foreign currency denominated loans that are NPL, so that would necessarily require that we take incremental impairment charges on the back of especially those that are backed by Naira collateral. So that would necessarily mean that we need to take incremental provision. A number of names may also not be able to, depending on the degree of devaluation, the impact on different obligors will vary. I think for us, the key thing is for us to stay very close to each and every one of our customers and manage the potential downside almost on a name-by-name basis. But overall, we think it would actually impact asset quality adversely.
Okay, next question, please.
Yes, our next question comes from Clement Adewili from Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. My question is on the interest expense line. I noticed there was a significant decline in interest expense, especially in Q2. And I was wondering, okay, since the MPC committee raised rates in Q1, that we're supposed to see a transition to interest expense. So I would like an explanation on that.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, let's take another question or two more.
Okay, our next question comes from Steve Motsi from BPI Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
All right, thank you. I'm just following up with two basic questions. And the first is that could you give us an indication of the absolute value of recoveries that you are expecting to make at least in the second half of this year? And the second question is some guidance on the USD loan growth we can expect this year. So we've noticed that it's come down your loan book went down by $200 million. Do you expect it to grow from that point onwards? Or the 25% will merely come from the devaluation impact?
Okay, I think we can take those three questions.
Okay, so taking the first question on interest expense, I mean, I think we highlighted earlier that one of the areas of key focus at the start of the year was on defending our NIMs, given the environment that we face. So we deliberately shed expensive deposits because, again, you also remember, for most of the first half of the year, in reality, up until literally the tail end of Q2, and more recently, the central bank's monetary policy bias was entirely different, where we had a pretty low interest rate environment, as manifested in the government securities arena. So we deliberately shed expensive deposits and actually did drop deposits in local currency. So hence, we saw the decline in interest expense. Now that the monetary policy stance is more aligned, and with the latest moves in MPR, we'd expect to see that trend change, because clearly we'll have to pay more on things like savings accounts and on additional purchase funds. But we believe that the direction of rates are now more NIM supportive, so we'll see some change without any impact on our NIMs, or adverse impact on our NIMs. There was a question on recovery and all that, and our outlook for the rest of the year. I think the bigger impact there for us is more looking at remediating the bigger loans, so we have some reversals from the NPL book. And that's what will have the bigger impact on all our credit metrics. I mean, we've consistently guided on the efforts we're making around our big exposures, specifically Atlantic Energy and one or two that have been mentioned on this call. And for us, given that many of those are already in the NPLs, it's the impact of remediating those names that will have the significant changes around our NPL ratio, our coverage ratio, and some of the other credit metrics. Now, we expect, given what we've done so far, we expect to see some significant impact before the end of this financial year, and to that extent, we do expect some changes in the guidance that we've given, which would be a lot more positive.
So, would you be able to give a figure in terms of what that amount could be?
From where we sit. We expect that to be somewhere in the range of between 50 to 100 billion. And the reason is simple. Our top three exposures or NPL exposures are significantly chunky enough where if we do succeed in doing what we plan to, then the change in values or declassifications are quite significant. And that is what we use this.
Okay. And any growth on the USD book, which came down $200 million?
Yeah, that is correct. We did drop about $200 million in the course of the quarter. Now that's been a deliberate strategy, again, to cap further currency downside risk. So we are aggressively trying to convert some of the loans that we had. We don't expect significant USD loan growth. Where we will see that at all will be in the trade book, but again, that we try to match against availability of foreign exchange, either through the CBN's forward window or on a spot basis. It's also important to highlight that we have a significant number of outstanding forward contracts that have been transacted on behalf of corporates with the central bank, which we believe will, when they mature over the course of the next 1 to 2 months, that will start to unwind some of the foreign currency trade exposure. But again, caveating that with that, given that the area of focus was in terms of the short-term revolving and tight transactions we're looking at, we will see that turn around, but again, being backstopped by availability of FX, because we don't want to increase currency exposure unduly.
I think it's also important to make the point that beyond the commercial bank, we also have another lending entity, that's the merchant bank. We started business in November last year, so they built up quite significant liquidity on the back of high capital base, and therefore they'll be looking to extend balance sheets, to their balance sheet to good names, just scanning the environment. So if you see an uptick in the loan book on the FCY, you also have to trace whether the growth is coming from the merchant bank that is well able to extend its balance sheet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll now take our next question from Nick Dimitrov from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just want to follow up on a number that you gave me a little bit early on the call. I believe when you were talking about asset quality in Q1, you did mention that renegotiated loans were 12% of the loan book, and 70% of those renegotiated loans comprised of oil and gas exposures. And I believe that you said earlier that renegotiated loans are 3.3% as of Q2. So I'm wondering whether I missed something, or how come renegotiated loans declined so abruptly? Did some of them went back to being performing, or they went down into NPL and were written off? I mean, if you can give us some more color on that front, that'll be great. Thank you.
Okay, let me just clarify. The 12% the number that was provided to you then referenced at 4th of December 2015. That was full year 2015 renegotiated loan. The number that has been provided on this call, which is 3.3, is actually the year-to-date renegotiated loan for FY 2016. I hope that clarifies.
Okay, so that is on top of the 12%.
12%.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
But don't forget that for the 12%, a number of them have come back, and that's why you have to reset your base. So it's not a number that you can, it's not cumulative. So you can't cumulate the two numbers.
Okay, I see. Now, just difficult to kind of get an accurate picture where asset quality is when a significant percentage of the distressed book migrates into our renegotiated loans. That's just trying to get some more clarity on that front. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Julia, do we have more questions, please? We'll be glad to take additional questions.
There are no questions at this time. I would like to hand the call back to Mr. Ukeke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for participating on this call, and we do hope we have provided clarity and explanations to the business that we are running today. I think it's important to state very clearly that we have demonstrated once again our resilience and our ability to weather the storm. We do believe that we're on a steady path to growth, and that as we run down this 2016, you're going to see improvements across the various metrics we are tracking, and we look forward to our 9 months results and, of course, the full year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This concludes the FBN Holding Half Year 2016 Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.